Welcome to the Mostly Pod Out at Night. Mostly, I'm Graveyard, joined by my co-host, Salem.
Hello.
This is episode 143 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. And, well, we are back to our regularly scheduled show after a week of show tunes, which was quite painful. Very funny for us.
No.
I don't think we're going to do show tunes again for April 1st. I hope.
Well, no, you can't. We have to at least keep switching up the genre.
Exactly. But this time, finally, we're heading back to feudal Japan to look at some of the classics in Japanese horror cinema. So grab your sword and armor, say goodbye to every wife you have, because there's a lot of wife leaving in these movies.
Yeah, I wonder what the deal is with like people having like multiple wives in Japan. I wonder. It seems to be fairly easy to do.
Very much. I'll just go to the next town.
Yeah,
exactly. So heading to the rice fields and join us as we get to Ugetsu, Onibaba, and Kwaidan. I am sure I'm butchering at least one of those.
That's good enough for me.
All right, so we'll get to Ugetsu from 1953. And yeah, I'm going to say right now, for the most part, the Japanese, at least the ones that we watch, not many characters, at least in the first two of these. Like, just a small, small cast. You know, and essentially we are introduced to a small village that has a chief and like five other people, I would say.
Well, five other people that they interact with, sure.
Correct. So we're introduced to kind of the main cast, a guy who, you know, makes pottery and has arguably the best pottery in the entire world.
I think in the general region. Yes, the entire world for people back then was like a day's ride away. So, yes, a day's ride, yes.
I mean, people were essentially weeping when they saw how good his pottery was in this movie.
I don't know about that.
I mean, yeah, so introduced to him, his, you know, wife and kid that's, I don't know, five. I'm not sure he spoke for himself.
Yeah, like comatose. I think they like drugged him.
Especially at the end, for sure.
Because they just like carried him around. He didn't like move on his own.
He was Yoda.
Yeah.
And then kind of what his was it brother-in-law?
I don't know if it was a brother-in-law or if they were just like friends that like lived close by. I honestly don't know. It might be like sitcom neighbor.
Yeah,
day. I don't know.
Well, the village idiot, essentially,
pretty much, yeah,
is like, you know, the stereotypical like crazy laughing Japanese guy, that wants nothing to do more than be a samurai. And like I said, this is feudal Japan, which is, I don't know the time frame. I'm sure you know better than me. 16th century.
Well, they just talked about Oda Nobunaga, so. Mm-hmm. Oda Nobunaga was in the late 16th century, mm-hmm. So it's probably roundabout, because I don't want to give you spoilers, but but then she talks about how her family was killed,
yeah,
by him, which would have been earlier, so we're talking probably early 1600s, early 17th century.
Right. So anyway, he goes, kind of brings his pots that he brings to the market and gets three silver coins, which is like filthy rich where they're from.
Well, if you're a peasant, yeah.
You know, enough to buy his wife just the most beautiful kimono that she's ever seen, which we don't get to see because it's black and white.
I'm gonna say it was pink
probably, and floral. Yeah, just a guess. And so, you know, his friend's like, oh man, I should go with you, we can make a living. And so he does like this huge stuff, and like it, you know, just feudal Japan is like soldiers and samurai just went into towns and just took everything they had because they were starving, killed.
Well, that's not unique to Japan.
No.
It's pretty much everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. It happened for a longer period of time in Japan simply because Japan like refused to move to a newer system for so long. Like, they didn't really catch up with the rest of the world until like the late 1800s. So
yeah, every there's how many hundreds of generals that had their own territory that they were constantly fighting.
Right. Well, yeah, this is the time period where they were all fighting each other, followed shortly after this by when they were all unified.
Yeah. So anyway, he takes his dopey friend and and it's like, hey, I'm gonna go do this stuff. And he brings all his wares that saved after like the raid and pillaging that they like the fire made him perfect. He goes to the local city and is selling his wares, and this is where they decide, you know what? Screw our wives. You know, we made enough money. Hey, I was invited to this, you know, house by this empress or enchantress.
Well, to be fair, they didn't say this yet. he got money. The one dude was like, oh shit, I finally got enough money to go buy my armor and weapons so I could pretend to be a samurai. So he runs away.
Yeah.
The other guy, the rich lady comes and orders a bunch of pottery and then asks for it to be delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to deliver it. So he hasn't given up yet.
To the manor. Yeah.
Correct.
So anyway, we'll follow his dopey friend, his plot thread, because they split off and never are seen.
Oh yeah, and they don't connect. Yeah, and the dopey friend ends about 30 minutes before the other one does.
Right, right. So he's doing all the stuff. He gets his gear, but he's kind of like begging. He's able to go there, and he sees a guy who's like defeated. It's general. Like, okay, I can't do this. Behead me. So his soldier beheads him, and he stabs that guy, and then steals his head and brings it to his general. Like, look what I did! Like, oh, you couldn't have done that. You're a peasant. No, general would lose to you. Anyway, what do you want? I want armor and gear and horses and my own squires and stuff like that. They're like, done. And so anyway, he's now this great general who goes to victory, and stops at a whorehouse,
brothel.
Well, yeah, a brothel. And he's telling all these people that want to be just like him, what did you do? And he's like, oh yeah, I studied the land and the arts, and is just lying through his ass. Anyway, he happens to find that his wife is now at the brothel. We don't necessarily know how long time has passed between these scenes.
Well, yeah, who knows? It appears that it was like two weeks.
Yeah,
but who knows?
It could have been, because the kid seems the same age, so maybe right. A year at max.
Right.
It's like, oh man, I have to, I went after to be rich and famous. I forgot about you. Let me get your honor back. And he gives up his life of a samurai to be with his wife again. Their story.
That's it.
Yep. Lesson learned. Go to war. Wife becomes a whore. So anyway, we're back with our main guy who kind of goes to delivers his wares, and he's just kind of like, oh, you know, our clan was destroyed except for us, you know, my nurse, everyone here, you should kind of stay here. And he does. And, you know, we find out that the heiress of the clan is able to like speak to her dead father's samurai mask and helmet and talks back. And the guy kind of just falls begrudgingly and forcefully in love with her.
I'm pretty sure there was like magic-y type stuff involved.
And drugs. It seems like he's drugged a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of he's like, okay, you know what? Man, I can't think of stop thinking about my wife, but he's walking and the priest goes, have you seen a ghost or demon recently? No? You should come with me. Okay. And then kind of writes his exorcism spells like, okay, well, this will take care of you. You'll get rid of this so you don't lose your life. He goes back to the manor, and she's like, oh, your skin, it burns. Ah, what's on your skin? Take it off. And you see that he has, some paintings on his back. And yeah, so he's like, okay. He kind of rolls out of the manor and goes asleep or gets knocked out or something happens essentially. He's woken up by soldiers like, oh, I'm from this manor. He's like, what? And like, it's completely destroyed. Like, it's been in ruins. And, it was afraid through the manor throughout this entire time. And it's like, oh, shit. He was a ghost in a ghost house this entire time. Eventually goes back to, his wife, who we do see her get stabbed earlier in the movie and kind of crawling away. He goes back to his house. He goes, hey, she's not here. Walks around, comes back, and oh, there she is. Everything's fine. And then he gets woken up the next morning. Oh, my kid's here. He's like, oh, no. The chief's like, I've been taking care of your kids since you've been gone. He just came to your house. Yeah, your wife's dead. What? She just made me stew last night. And then kind of ending with him at her gravesite. The end.
The end.
Yeah. Yeah, like, so there's a couple random encounters where he's trying to buy something nice for someone. He's like, I'm going to this manor. He's like, yeah, take my shit. Get out of here. Realizing that it's like a haunted place. So that's the movie.
Correct.
I feel like there's some, I definitely have heard of that before, of this movie, or know some pieces of it. I'm like, oh, this does seem familiar. You and I probably watched the same thing, and this was there, I believe.
Well, it's very common in Japanese folklore. It's kind of funny for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's when I'm reading it or watching it, because like the people aren't really held against their will all that strongly.
No, they just asked.
Right. Yeah. And it's like the demons and stuff that you encounter in Japanese folklore aren't like if there's a, you know, like an American or European story that has a demon in it, somebody's fucking dying.
It's evil. Right? It's
there's murder, there's blood, there's like bodies everywhere. And like there's a demon in Japanese folklore, it might be like, you know, somebody that's like trying to coerce you to go to their house.
Yep.
Like that's it. And then when you go to the house, you're like, I don't want to be here anymore. And then you leave and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah, it's just very odd to me. There's so many like weird demons that they have that like look scary and weird, and like all you have to do is like ask them to leave and they're gone. It's so odd to me.
It's like they ask you like, hey, why don't you sin? No. All right. I tried. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. See you later. And they never come back. Like, it's so bizarre. It's just different cultures, I guess, but there's so many stories that are, like Japanese stories. I'm like, that's it. That's the story. Like, that's not a story. Like, yeah. It was just because we're used to it. It's a different culture, which is, it's interesting.
Right. And they heavily believe in the demons a lot more than we do too.
Correct. That is correct.
You know, and I think Middle Eastern and Muslim is everyone has their own personal demon as well.
Yeah. There's like, you know, demons out there in general, but yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, this is interesting. You know, I thought it was interesting that they thank Martin Scorsese for the reproduction of this too.
For the modern one, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, part of their Criterion collection, I believe. And he's part of
right. Well, that's like almost every Japanese film I've ever watched from like these early time periods are almost all of them in the Criterion collection.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost all of them. Like barely any I've watched that don't have that moniker on them.
Yeah.
That's basically how they got here. I mean, it's before that, it was hard to find. I mean, some of the major ones, like Kurosawa, you could probably find his big films, but like most of the other ones didn't really make it here until they started actively putting them in that collection.
Right. And I found it interesting too, is like, you know, you could say that, oh, why are so many taking place in feudal Japan? Well, why are so many American movies in the same time for the Wild West? It's the same thing.
Right. It's like the most exciting time of your history. So you might as well do it, right? It's like, what are they going to do? It's 1953. Hey, you want to make a modern movie or a recent history movie? Let's not.
Right? Let's go into the field down
the street. Let's do something else. So they're going to go back to their golden age, and that's what they did. But this 53 is like the beginning of major Japanese cinema. I mean, this is when, you know, Kurosawa was active in this time period. So this is
Godzilla was just coming out.
Right. Yeah. This is the dawn of modern Japanese cinema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll start with my highlights. I think it's interesting between ghosts and demons that there was not a huge differential between them in this movie, in this culture. Realistically, I find it awesome. I thought it was pretty fun, you know, funny that the painting, because they believe that is the painting of the symbols in the body, works. You know, like we have to have like this whole show, like, oh, we have to burn sage. Oh, you have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this. There's like, hey, go visit the holy guy. He'll paint some things on you and you're good.
Right. Well, I'm hijacking yours a little bit. I'll just add one of my highest to yours is it's also interesting that Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
is the thing that's warding off demons,
mm-hmm.
right? At any American or European film, it's going to be Jesus, right? It's going to be crosses in the Bible and holy water and all that shit. And this is not. There's no Christianity at all. I mean, there is in Japan at this time period, but very, very few actual Japanese people follow it.
Right, yeah. I mean, essentially, you are able to defeat the ghost and demon by yourself.
Well, yeah, it's but you know, Buddhism, they have their priests, you know, they have that kind of stuff, so they can do their exorcisms. They still believe in the demons and that shit. It's just interesting that it's not Christianity at all.
Oh yeah, which is we are debated before. Maybe Exorcist should be not Christian based next time.
Right,
it'd be a really different movie. I would say kind of like one of the last shots is very. What I have seen multiple times is very iconic of him entering the house with no one there, going around it and then coming back and then everyone being there again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's rare for like a house. And I think our movies that to be as dilapidated as these houses are in these films, that they wouldn't notice a giant hole in the floor when they're just that illusioned into it. And arguably kind of a bad ending.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at least that like his village is still there and his kid's still alive, but yeah, his wife is dead. That's not
sure. Pleasant. His kid's alive. He's just a sack on his ghost wife.
Right.
Most of the movie.
And then go back to his ghost wife.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I have. What are your highlights?
It's interesting to see, you know, like the war side of this, like the kind of peasant, you know, small folk side of war, mm-hmm. right? We don't really see the side of war from the actual participants in the war at all. We're really only seeing the aftermath and like mm-hmm. the people trying to live in the destruction that it caused afterwards. It's interesting. You know, when there's a fight happening, it's just, we see like people hiding in the woods, like waiting right. for it to be over. We don't see any of the fighting at all.
Right.
Which is, it's an interesting side to see. The scene when he was like initially being like bewitched by the ghost lady, mm-hmm. She like kind of like grabs him and holds him down. And then when she gets up, it's kind of a subtle scene, but I thought it was really interesting, especially for 1953, is that like, he like kind of like staggers back and like throws his head back, and then he actually like spits like smoke out of his mouth.
Yeah.
So like you can actually see that, like, you know, he's being whatever taken over, or you know, taking tempted. Parts of his soul, yeah. whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just an interesting effect again for 53, because it had to have been done on camera. Like there's no special effects, so
right.
I just thought it was interesting. And then again, the Buddhism instead of Christianity warding off the demon, I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm. You want to roll into your low points then?
Sure. Okay. It takes more than a weapon and armor to be a samurai. I mean, like, what does he think is going to happen? Like, I'm going to be a samurai. Like, how? You haven't been trained in the use of any of this stuff. Like, just because you look like one, you're going to die immediately whenever you go into a fight. Like, I don't know what he thinks. I don't know. I guess it's a thing that's still common today. I mean, I think it's always been common. There's people that like think soldiers are cool. And they want to be one, but they don't know how to, like, you know, they don't have the training to actually, like, be a functional one. It's bizarre to me.
Well, and us, we just have a minute and a half of montage of learning how to fire a gun.
Right, yeah. But it's, but I, you know what I'm saying? It's just, like, it's odd. Mm-hmm. That, whatever. I don't get the whole eyebrows on the forehead thing.
No idea. We don't see it in just this movie either.
No, it's a common thing in that era. I don't understand it. Like, do you want them to be like super surprised all the time? Is that like the goal of beauty, that they should be shocked all mm-hmm. the time? Like, I just don't understand it. It's so bizarre looking. They like shave off their eyebrows and then like draw on eyebrows like halfway up their forehead.
Yes.
It's very weird looking. And it was very distracting. It was only the one rich lady that did it, but
it's a second pair of eyes.
Yeah. It's just, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed like most of the music and stuff that was accompanying. There was not a lot, but there was some. But there's like some scenes where there's like these kind of like random squeaky flutes.
Yeah, there are.
And it's just like, okay, like I can appreciate some of it, but like, what are you doing right now? Please stop that. And then there was like, it's a long setup. I guess I put it more, I was debating on whether to put it like in the middle or something, because it's a long setup. We get to know these characters before anything really happens to them, which mm-hmm. is interesting. We don't usually get that long of an introduction. But I was saying it was a long setup before anything kind of interesting happened. You know, like when he goes, when he goes through the manor, I mean, we're talking, it's like almost an hour in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there's a long setup for not a huge return, which is, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of annoying. But that's all I got.
I got obviously rape.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I wrote this. I'm like, okay, so everyone's trying to hide in the village what's happening. How were they talking? In whispers? No, they were shouting at each other and screaming, which I'm like, okay, don't do that. that was dumb. Like, you're trying to hide, you're trying to escape, all this stuff. No, let's shout as loud as we possibly can.
Well, to be fair, I don't think the microphones they had would have picked them up if they were whispering, which is why they were talking.
I know, but I'm just saying. I don't know who dubbed the sun crying, but that was the most ear-piercing, annoying sound of the entire movie. It went on for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That was awful. Just awful. It sounded like a chimpanzee being electrocuted.
How do you know what that sounds like?
Just the loud ear-piercing screech is my guess. So... that's really what I have. Obviously, war too. Like, I would not want to live in that type of world.
All right. Well, yeah, it's interesting because, like, once you build your hut, right, the only thing you really need is food.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how are you going to get it, right? I mean, that's the thing. In the middle of a war, you can't really farm. There's people burning and murdering people all over the place. It's hard on everybody.
Not well-fed soldiers. So let's just go with that. All right, so our olives this week are sake bowls because, you know, why not?
There's always sake bowls.
There is, especially the most glamorous ones that you can't believe those were once your pots that have been painted so beautifully in black and white. So
that's why they tell you, so you know, because you can't see it for yourself.
That's true. So, Salem, how many sake bowls out of 10 do you give Ugetsu?
I mean, it's an interesting movie. I mean, would I watch it again? Probably at some point. But yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, anyway, 6.75. That's what I give.
6.75
sake bowls out of 10.
Yeah. Listen, you're right. It is an interesting movie, but it's not a slow burn either. It's just like this big lead up to 5 minutes worth of scenes.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, it's a long setup, which is, again, good because you get to learn all the characters and stuff. But, like, I think it was a bit too long.
Right. It just felt slow and everything like that. So I will go 6.5 sake bowls out of 10. Am I going to watch it again? No. But do I understand why it's important to the cinema? Yes, absolutely. All right, so take us through Onibaba from 1964.
Onibaba. Okay, so I'll try to keep it simple. There's a there's not a whole lot that happens, I guess, honestly. So one is there is a mother and her daughter-in-law who are, again, this is as product of war. Their husband, son, respectively, has gone off to war. And they're left, back on the farm, and I guess their crops failed. So the way that they are living is they are waiting for lost soldiers to wander near them. And then they murder them, strip them down, and then sell all the stuff.
Throw them in the hole.
And they have a magic, like, bottomless hole in their field.
Yeah.
That they decided not to put a fence or anything around. So it's like this giant murder hole that they just leave there that's surrounded by very tall grass.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing that. We witness them do that a couple of times, going and selling them at the fence and getting their food. That's how they're eating. So a guy comes back who is a guy from their little village. He was like the next hut over, who had left with the son husband, and then comes back and tells them he died. Like, here's our long adventure, but sorry, he died. I'm the only one who made it back. Give me some food. Okay, great. See you later.
Yep.
And then, like, the next day he, like, stops by, gives him a fish, realizes that, like, oh yeah, like, the daughter here is, kind of hot. I'm digging it. So he keeps trying to hit on her. And the old lady, the mom, is trying to stop this from happening. right?
Yeah.
Like, don't go near that guy. He just, you know, he's just trying to get in your pants, like, to stay away from him. And of course, you know, her being young and not being a lot of other people around.
Zero other people.
Right. She kind of falls for him. So she, you know, starts leaving at night. As soon as the mom falls asleep, she starts running over and visiting this guy so they can bone at night. Mm-hmm. And then she runs back and jumps back into bed before the mom can catch them. So she's doing that a bunch of nights. The mom catches her and is upset about it. And she kind of like just keeps doing it anyway. So the mom then, you know, while she's off boning the dude one night, the mom is up and a samurai comes to her hut. And a samurai like wearing the full mask and everything. And he mm-hmm. tells her like, oh, I'm wearing this mask. I'm not going to take it off. You know, he gives her a bunch of different reasons. Like, oh, I'm the handsomest samurai in the world. You know, I don't want to hurt my face. I can't show it my face because it's so handsome. Blah, blah. You know, we're a bunch of goofy shit. And he's like, now how do I get back to town? Because I want to go back to war. I got lost. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I'll show you. So, of course, she walks him into the field and drops him in the hole.
Yep.
She goes down in the hole. And now I was like almost 100% positive that when she took the mask off, it was going to be her dead son.
Oh, as did I.
Oh, boy, here it is, dead son. And when she took it off and she didn't really react, I was like, oh, it's not? I was like, okay, that was a weird plot point then.
That went nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay. So she like sells all his stuff, you know, because he was like a samurai. I guess she got more, but we don't even see that part. So she sells all the stuff off and then she kind of, you know, lets the daughter, you know, go off and run to the hut. And then she, finds a demon in the reeds, that has the same mask that the samurai did. And so she gets scared, screams and runs back home. Now this mm-hmm. happens a couple of nights, like two or three times and she gets scared. And the mom keeps saying, oh yeah, I'm going to, sell more of this stuff we got. You know, you just stay here and don't go anywhere. And then every time she leaves, of course she tries to run into the hut and the same demon comes out.
With spectacularly almost the same hair as her mother-in-law.
So yeah, the dude is starting to get upset because now like Daryl isn't coming to, you know, to his hut every night. So he's trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the old lady is trying to run interference and stuff. And basically they kind of say, well, we're going to, you know, go off and do our own thing no matter what you say. And so this time when they go over there, the demon comes out and like basically tries to like scare both of them. And so yeah, the girl eventually gets scared enough to where she runs back to the house. But the mom, the demon, I guess we give it away, right? The mom is the demon, right? Wearing the mask of the samurai who is just trying to scare her daughter or daughter-in-law from going back to the dude.
Mm-hmm.
But the, now the mask is stuck and she can't get it off. The daughter is like trying to get it off and she's like begging, please take it off. She's like, okay, well, I'm going to go like hang out and bone this dude and you're not going to stop me anymore if I take it off. She's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. So like a lot of screaming, a lot of fighting. She ends up taking the mask off with a hammer blow to the face
because the mom couldn't get the mother-in-law couldn't get off and was begging right, for help.
Right. So she hits her in the face with a hammer and cracks it off, but it takes her skin with it. It's like hard to tell because it's in black and white, but yeah.
Well, like it did on when she took off the guy in the pit too.
Right. Well, it just looked like he just had like measles or something. I don't know. Like he had was burned. They didn't explain like whatever.
Right. But her face looks the same as his did.
Right. Yeah. So then she, you know, is now scared of her own mother because she doesn't have skin on her face. So she runs and they both jump over the hole. And that's it. But there's another scene where the guy goes back to his hut after chasing after the demon and he gets stabbed by another soldier that was hiding in his hut.
Yeah. We're assuming the mother-in-law made it over the hole.
They both like jumped. They both like realized the hole was there and jumped. I don't know what the point of that was.
Like I was expecting the mother-in-law to fall into the hole.
So was I, right? Yeah, that's what I was expecting. But no, she like does the same leap, and then it ends like as she's leaping. So unless the daughter like you know catches her legs and throws her down or something, I don't know. But yeah, it ends at the point before we realize what happens to either of them. But we do know that the dude is now dead because he got stabbed by another hiding soldier that was eating his food in his tut.
Yep.
End of story. I think it would be an interesting twist if that was the husband, brother, or son.
Oh, absolutely. It made way more sense in the beard.
Like, and he stabs him not because he's scared and he got caught, but because the guy was an asshole and probably tried to kill him.
Right.
But yeah. we don't get any information at all. We get nothing from it. So that's it.
Kind of went nowhere.
Correct. Yeah. He's just the guy that murdered him and we didn't get anything. But I was, again, at this point, I guess the twist is that it wasn't what I expected it to be. Like, I was like, oh, the dude with the mask. Let me guess. This is his son. Like, I was like 100% sure.
Mm-hmm. I was wrong.
Yeah. This is of the three movies. This is one I knew the most about. This, especially the mask. The mask is very prevalent in Japan when people talk about Japanese horror movies. The mask that is being worn is very present.
Well, it's an Oni mask. They're used all over the place.
Right. So, like I said, I knew kind of the twists of this one, just not on purpose, obviously, just from years of watching horror things. So, now have you seen this, any of these before?
No.
Okay. But yeah, like I said, first thoughts. Yeah, I agree. I think if we just had those couple of twists, it'd been better. So,
well, I don't know. I don't know about better. It was just, that's just what I was expecting. And I guess the twist is that it wasn't what it wasn't the twist I expected it to be. So
mm-hmm.
either one of them. So, which is interesting ish. It ended on a weird note, but
very weird note.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first for your highlights?
Sure. Okay. Again, here we're seeing the, the kind of the peasant side of mm-hmm. war. Again, like people, they can't farm, they can't do anything. So the only way they can live, this obviously not the only way, murder is not the only way to live, but it is a way of living. Some people go that far to survive, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting seeing that side of the war. We don't really see real soldiers fighting at all. That's not what this movie is about. We see the other side of it, which is fun. We see they murder people in the woods, and then we watch like the entire scene of them like literally stripping off all of their clothes, all of their weapons, all of their stuff, and then the full trip of them going to the fence and then selling it.
Yeah.
So there is no like misunderstanding what they do. Like this is what they are, and that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think the full samurai gear that the guy in the mask had was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
The samurai and the curse of what the mask is all about. We didn't get any information about that at all.
No.
I thought that was an interesting mystery, right? It's like, what the hell was that? Why? Like, what happened? Did he have the curse too? And that's why he couldn't take the mask off?
I think so.
Or was he just burned or diseased? That with black and white, it's hard to tell if he had the same thing that she did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? I just thought it was an interesting thing. That's all I got.
Yeah, I think the introduction of the hole was interesting, as you pointed out. They talk about like the world going bad, essentially. Like, oh, well, we're starving because there's a frost in summer. And then, just these weird things like a horse gave birth to a cow. And like, it's like a weird like end of the world type thing, which I can see at that point in time.
Well, yeah, we're talking fucking Middle Ages.
Yeah.
like portents, right? Because again, like you imagine how misinformed people are now
mm-hmm.
with the access to information that we have. Imagine how misinformed they would be back then without any access to any information at all. You're
days away from people.
Exactly. Like you're hearing rumors that are like telephoned through like 12 other towns before they get back to you. Mm-hmm. Like, and nobody has any idea what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. This is 1964. I was surprised by the sheer number of times boobs were out.
Yeah, man. They were just like the mom and the daughter. I was just like, okay. We're doing this.
Probably half the time.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, we're doing this. And then they're just like laying down like, okay, time for bed. They're both just like stripping topless. I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess that's probably how they slept in the summer, but like, it's just interesting that they just let them flop out there. You know,
you did not have that in 1964 American
movies. No, not at all. Not at all. I was just like, oh, all right, we're doing this. And it was just like a lot of it. Like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Like, wow, I was not expecting that.
No, I wasn't either. Like, it's because the old lady's the first one we see.
Yeah.
And she's just like hanging out with one flopping out. I'm like, what?
Doing chores like that.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Also, bad ending.
Yeah. Confusing ending.
That too. Like I said, I was just thought maybe the mom, you know, didn't make it over the hole. I don't know. I could have seen that kind of, you know, her penance for trying to pretend to be a demon. Who knows? That's all I have. I'll roll into my low points. The old hag is 40.
All right. Well, again, this is in a time period when life expectancy was a lot lower.
I know. So that was pretty funny. You know, gaslighting. There's a lot of gaslighting by the mother-in-law.
Well, that's like song as old as time, right?
Yeah.
Your mother or mother-in-law is trying to tell you what to do and how mm-hmm. to do it.
And something when I was looking up the age of the woman who played the mother-in-law, I thought it was really interesting that this is a product of its time too. Is okay, so they have names in the movie, right? They are labeled as the son that we didn't see at all. That guy's name's mother and that guy's name's wife. They don't have their character names in their credits. And I found that really interesting. Like, they have legit names. And it's just so weird that, you know, for being 1964, that it's still that way. It's like, you're not your character. You're this person, this man's wife or mother.
Well, a lot of stories are like that. A lot of stories are like, the main character of the story is either already dead.
Yeah.
Or gone, and this is like the aftermath of that. Like, technically, you could say Game of Thrones is like that.
Yeah.
Because, like, Rhaegar was technically the main character of that story, even though he was dead before it started.
Right, but Daenerys isn't Rhaegar's daughter in credits.
But
you know what I mean?
1964, maybe it would be.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting that they didn't have their own... They were just who they were, not who they are. those are my low points. How about yours?
I think bizarre love triangle that was the mom was trying to like make happen there.
Mm-hmm.
It was very weird. She was just like, "Oh, you want to bone my daughter? How about you just bone me?" It's like, what? Yeah. And he's like, "No way." Like, dude, that guy would have been like, "All right."
Oh,
he would have been, taking them both for sure, but that's fine. Eating the poor puppet dog
mm-hmm.
was terrifying. I did not like that at all. I was like, oh, look, they found a friend. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. It's bad. How about putting a fence around that hole? Or some kind of notification, like fucking a banner or something, like notifying you it's there. Like, because they're like running full force through the fucking reeds like that. And the reeds are as tall as they are. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, dude, somebody's going to die in there.
Stay off of the tall grass.
Yeah. And then again, like the ending, like why the hell is she running away from her own mom? And why the hell is she trying to put her in a hole?
I don't know.
Yeah. Again, we don't know. That's the whole point. That's it.
I'll throw more in the eating scenes.
Oh, you don't like when they're chewing on weird little birds on sticks?
Like we're seeing them eat a meal, like legit eat a meal. It's just like shoving as much food in their face as possible. So. All right, so sake bowls out of 10. I'll go first with this one. I did like this one more than Ugetsu. I think this was more, yes, it was still kind of a slow build up, but I feel like more stuff happened. There's more excitement throughout the entire movie versus the last 5 minutes. So I will go to, I'm going to go to 8 sake bowls out of 10 for Onibaba. How about you?
I won't go quite that high. I like this one probably a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
But right about the same. I'll give it a 7.
7. Okay. So for our last one, which is Quaidon, There's four stories, so we'll kind of treat this as a anthology movie as we do with everything else. We kind of each take a story, right? So I will go first with it. The first one, I don't remember the names off the top of my head.
The first one is The Black Hair.
Yeah, that's, yep, you're correct. The Black Hair. So essentially we meet, man.
Well, essentially it's just the plot of Ugetsu.
It is, yeah. A guy leaves looking for fame and fortune.
Well, again, a guy is married.
Yeah.
He's tired of being married to a poor lady, so he leaves and then marries a rich lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then starts missing his old wife. So he leaves the rich lady, goes back to his young wife, and then, you know, meets up with her, has a nice evening of food and getting, you know, catching up and that, whatever. And he wakes up in the morning and he's in a ruined house and his wife is dead.
With lots and lots of black hair.
With lots of black hair. And he goes to like touch the hair and it comes alive and chases him around the house. Yeah. And that's it.
That's very true.
Story.
Yeah.
There's not much to it.
Yeah. Like I said, he gets married and he's like, why'd you get married again? Blah, blah, blah. But yep. That's very true. So the next one is The Woman of the Snow.
Yeah. And this one is, kind of a common folktale, right? So it's a woodcutter and his, you know, a woodcutter apprentice, you know, he's young. And the old woodcutter that's, you know, his master. They go woodcutting in the forest. They get stuck in a blizzard on the way back. They're like freezing to death and they try to hide in this little hut. This woman, you know, kind of, you know, dressed all in white with like a frosty looking visage, right? Comes out and blows ice at the old man and he dies. Right. And she goes over to the young guy to go blow ice at him. And she's like, oh, wait, you're kind of hot. Okay, here's the deal. I'll let you live. You just can't tell anybody you ever saw me. See you later. Bye. And so he goes home and he, you know, obviously, you know, is messed up. So he has to take time to heal. And so after he heals, he goes back to being a woodcutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he meets a lady on his way back. You know, that's, I mean, I guess spoilers here is very obviously the lady from that we just saw the scene before in slightly different clothes and makeup. But she's like, oh, I'm lost. You know, I'm on my way to this town, but I don't know where it is. And he's like, oh, just come back to my house, you know, have some dinner. And so then they get married and have three children.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 10 years later. You know, she's like super happy. He's super happy. Everybody in the town's talking about how great and happy they are. What a perfect family. And so then, you know, they're like, you know, he makes everybody new shoes for Christmas or whatever it is. And then he's talking to her and he's like, oh, yeah, I just remembered this thing that happened 10 years ago. Yeah, this lady killed the woodcutter and then said, hey, I'll kill you if you ever tell anybody about this again. So I'm going to tell you right now. Right after I looked at you and was like, huh, you look a lot like that lady I saw. So I'm going to tell you all about it. So then she goes, yeah, so that was me. That, you know, you totally just told me the thing you said you wouldn't tell me. But I'm not going to kill you because I don't want to murder the children. So you take care of the children. See you later. Bye.
Yep.
That's the story.
Yep. Yeah. So then Hoshi the Earless, essentially we start off with like, it's a reenactment of a battle and people jumping into the ocean. And we realize it's by being told and through the Biwa by Hachi, who's blind, so blind that he can't open his eyes. And
well, it's an old movie. They can't put like, you know, white contacts in yet.
Right. So anyway, so he's new to this area, and all of a sudden, like someone comes to visit him. He's like, "I'm new. I don't know who's here." He's like, "Hey, you should come back. And I want you to play for my master." Right. So he does that, and everything kind of is fine. And then he kind of knows, like, "Oh, his wife. Where'd you go? Oh, he's back. Cool." And then he kind of goes like, hey, you should not do this again. And it's like, okay. But then we kind of realize like the samurai that's visiting is like a ghost for the most part. He's like, hey, you should do this. But he's like, no, I can't do this anymore. And so, you know, he's like, hey, I need help with this anymore. So he goes to a priest who then, you know, paint the prayer over his entire body, except for one area, his ears. So it's going to make him invisible to the ghost samurai. So he's like, just don't move. Don't go with him. He won't come back if you don't go with him. The ghost samurai shows up. He's like, I don't see him. Like, huh, There's his ears flowing precariously 2 feet off the ground. You know what? These are good enough to take to my master. He's like, huh, these aren't coming off. He just kind of starts tugging at his ears and eventually rips them off.
Right. Even though he's wearing a sword.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Like, bare hands, dude, maybe you have a tool that would make this easier.
Uh-huh. So he rips them off. They're like, oh, man, Hochi's dead. There's a lot of blood over here. No, he's just earless now, so we'll call him Hochi the Earless. And then he's like, okay. And he continues to play his biwa for lots of people, and just people are going all over places, and the temple he's at is just getting lavished with gifts. That's it.
Yep.
And then the last one is the most modern era that we've seen in these movies, in a cup of tea.
Yeah, so yeah, it's like, okay, well, you have to frame it with that there's an old guy who's kind of like a historian, and he's writing about how, oh yeah, I write about all these stories and I read all these old stories, and some of them are interesting and some of them aren't finished. Here's one that's not finished. And so
the guy lazy.
Yeah, and then he goes back, then we go back in time, and he's showing us the unfinished story, which is a samurai, you know, sees a face in a cup of tea. And like keeps like splashing it out, getting different cups, and he keeps seeing the same face. And then he's like, oh, that sucks. And so like that night he's on watch duty. He goes, you know, he knocks over a cup of tea before he even looks at it. Mm-hmm. And then the guy whose face was in the tea shows up, and he's like, oh, hey, I was the guy that's in the tea. You remember me? He's like, nope.
You were in my day earlier.
Yeah. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, like, you know, you hurt me earlier. I didn't like that. He's like, okay. And then he tries to stab him.
Yep.
And it doesn't look like he succeeds because the guy just disappears. So he runs around the intruder. Everybody gets up and goes around like, yeah, we didn't find any intruder. And he's like, oh, you said his name was this. Like, yeah, nobody's ever heard that name. So you're crazy. Like, yep. Just go home and go to sleep. So he goes home. He goes to sleep. And then he's woken up, you know, saying, hey, there's some guys here to see you. So he goes out there and there's like three guys and they're like, oh yeah, we're servants of the guy that you stabbed earlier. Like, yeah, you stabbed him. He doesn't feel good. He's going to come back and kill you on such and such a date. And he's like, oh, that sucks. And then he tries to kill them. And there's like a long, weird fight scene where he's stabbing air and then he somehow kills them. And then they come back to life and surround him. And then that's it.
Yep.
That's where the unfinished story ends. And so then it's like we go back to the framing story where it's like, oh, yeah, I'm his publisher. Let's go check on this guy. Oh, where's the guy? He's not here. I don't know. The lady screams and runs away looking at the well. And the guy goes, you know, looks in the well. He screams and runs away, too. And then we look in the well and it's just the guy sitting in the water.
Yep.
Waving at us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of the story.
Yes. Yes. You know, this is a long movie.
Yeah, it's over 3 hours long.
Yeah. So, you know, you told me about that. I'm like, yeah, I was already watching it. You just made sure for the record. But I'm like, I looked at the time, like, 3 hours? Holy shit. But, yeah, it's an anthology, so it's four short stories or four short films, even though one's really long, the other one's really short.
The first two are 45 minutes. The third one is, like, over an hour. And then the fourth one is like maybe 25 minutes.
Yeah. But I was not expecting an anthology movie at all. So that's good, though. At least it broke it up. What are your first thoughts upon watching this?
The first thoughts was, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, seeing all the different pieces with the kind of narration in between. It's an interesting format.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these stories are kind of classic folktale stories.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting.
Yeah. I'll go first with my highlights. Like I said, it's interesting. Four ghost stories. Appreciate that. And I think, you know, in the Hochi story, the colors were very vibrant. This is our first color one as well. So, I mean, they chose like very vibrant colors. So it was like good contrast. The blood looked good. Everything looked good. You know, especially when they're jumping into the water and like the colors are kind of spreading out around them as well. And like I said, I think the effects that they had in this, especially with the ghosts, stuff like that, was pretty interesting for, you know, 1964. You know, it wasn't just like a skeleton on strings. It was like, you know, people appearing in tea, people that were ghosts and disappearing in the wall. So I think for 1964 cinema, it was pretty good. Yeah, and like I said, they are almost folklorish and like, you know, fables, if you will. And I think In a Cup of Tea felt like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, kind of, for sure.
You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, huh. You know, with especially with the narration and everything like that, very reminiscent of Twilight Zone. So I appreciate that, too, just having that seem that way. So those were my highlights. How about you?
Yeah, color was fun. Mm-hmm. So like I said, you could tell they were like, yay, color! And they just used it in everything. It was it was great. I thought the use of the matte paintings in these films was interesting. Like every time they looked at the sky or every time it was like the background, it was always like an interesting painting of, yeah, like an eye or just the sky pictures. It was like interesting, like traditional Japanese paintings as backgrounds. I thought it was pretty cool looking. The first story was really similar to Ugetsu, like very similar. And I was kind of sitting here like, how often does like somebody marry somebody and then leave and go marry somebody else?
All the time.
Like, yeah, like how does marriage like legality work in ancient Japan? Like I don't know. I should look it up, I guess.
It's fable got that marriage. You have a wife in every town.
Yeah, wife in every town as long as they don't meet each other. Exactly. So and this movie is not the only one that does this. This movie did it a lot more than the other ones did. Japanese movies have an interesting use of sound. So where there's like a lot of scenes that like you don't hear the effects of things that are happening in the scene necessarily. They like tone in and focus on some kind of like environmental noise. So there's like something happening in the background and like you don't hear the person walking or screaming or saying things. You're just like focusing on this like environmental sound. They do that a lot in films. They usually focus on something else other than the sound that's happening in there. But it's interesting that they seem like all of these films do it at least once. And this one does it a lot. It's just an interesting use of sound. I thought it was cool. The second story, The Lady in the Snow, is essentially a White Walker as described in the books for Game of Thrones. And that's essentially what they are. Like obviously in the show they're monstrous, but in the book they're just described as exactly that. They're just like very white skinned people with like blue lips and eyes that are just like very cold and freeze everything they touch. It's essentially like what it was. I wonder if that was like an inspiration.
Oh, quite possible.
And then the third story, it's an interesting take on like the traditional storytelling, like the song singing, like, you know, kind of like a element of like historical you know, kind of a reconstruction, is like singing songs, like the entire history of that like battle slash time period. Like when he was talking to the emperor, was like, oh yeah, it's like 27 parts with like, you know, 5 different variations and like 19 different side stories. And it's like, wow, that's a lot of stuff to know.
And Hoshi told it the best. So
yeah, but that was like his focus. I'm like, well, I mean, that if that's like how long it takes to tell a story, then yeah, that would have to be your focus, because how are you gonna remember to do everything else,
right?
But it's interesting to see that. Again, the body paint was done more interesting in this one because it was like all over the entire body. And it's kind of funny that like it has to be a commonplace thing, because if you've watched Conan the Barbarian, when Conan is covered in the symbols, it looks exactly like that. So like they must have just copied like traditional Buddhist exorcism is what I'm. All right, that's it for my high points. I'll go to my low points here. Again, the eyebrows on the forehead, man.
Yep.
I don't get it. Like, just stop with that. And then his rich wife in the first story had these like black ass teeth.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was like, is she supposed to be like evil? Is that a way of saying she's evil or something? Or is that just a weird thing that they did with like the eyebrows and the forehead? I don't know.
At first I thought she had no teeth when they first showed it.
No, but they're covered in like black ink, but some of the back ones are not. It was very bizarre. And I was like, I was wondering what the hell that was. And then in the second story, the snow lady, she has black teeth too, when she's in her like snow lady persona.
Right.
And I was like, does that mean that they're like evil or bad, like some kind of like, you know, thing, you know, because I don't know, like, you know, different cultures have different things to like say, hey, this guy's secretly evil, and you know that because of this. I was like, is black teeth bad? Is that a thing? I don't know. That was interesting. And every time they said somebody was young in this film, they're like pushing 40.
Uh-huh.
Like every single person, oh, he's young. Like that dude is not young. Like, his hair is dyed black because it's probably gray. That is not a young man.
Right.
They said, yeah, the first one, he's like, oh, he's young. Like, no, he's no. not young at all.
No.
But yeah, every time they said young, they were definitely not young. It was interesting. The fourth story, there's this hilarious fucking scene where he's fighting the three guys in the courtyard where he is literally doing his own slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
It is, he's trying to move like he's in slow motion, but he's obviously moving in real time. It is fucking hilarious to watch. I thought it was great. And then again, why would you put an unfinished story in there? That's just weird. I mean, I know that they tried to have like, you know, the twist kind of Twilight Zone ending on there, but like, why? Mm-hmm. Why would you bother saying it's unfinished? I don't know. It just bothered me. That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Long as hell.
What?
For sure. Yeah. Way too long. I'm saying there could have been Kaiwadon 1 and 2.
Okay. There was a point that said intermission. That's when you go and take a break. I know. It's like a movie and then a break and then a movie.
Yeah.
That's why true. Intermission is there. That's what you're supposed to do. You didn't do that, did you?
No, I did not.
See? That's why.
You know, blind equals closed eyes.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna say they're blind. Like again, if you don't have like CGI or like eye contacts, like if your eyes are open, you're gonna look like you can see because your eyes are gonna move normally.
Hochi, open your eyes, you can see.
Yeah, like yeah, Charlie Cox's ability to pretend like you're blind was not around in 1964.
Exactly. You know, I said. Yeah, I said, like, leaving the wife for Stas. Like, that's clearly very common in feudal Japan.
Right. It's so weird. Like, you just leave one wife, like, I don't like this wife. I'll see you later, wife. I'm going to go get another wife. Like,
yep.
Is that legal? Like, is that.
And then and every time you come back, she's like, oh, I miss you. I tried everything I could to be a better wife. Like, wow.
Yeah, like, what the fuck, dude?
Now, okay, the priest with Hochi. We wrote on every part of his body. You wrote on his penis, but forgot his ears.
Maybe they gave him like special underwear that had writing on it.
maybe, but the ears were quite obviously not painted. Like if you're looking at them.
Right.
I'm like, oh man. And then like we said before, the guy just trying to rip the ears off this floating body that's moving around. It's like, take out your sword, cut his ears.
Right. Like I can see like, oh, you think they're floating ears? Just try to grab them. The first grab, I understand.
Right.
When it won't come with you and you have to like keep tugging harder, like you have a tool in your belt that would be very good for this. Why don't you use your tool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And in the, you know, in a cup of tea, man, the editing between of the guy who's supposed to be disappearing and not, like he's like, oh, he's running forward. And then like they restage the stab forward.
Right.
Like not cut very well in the slightest.
Well. Probably didn't have the best editing rooms back then.
I know. Like I said, and then the first one I thought was like, you know, so I don't understand what happened to the guy in the first story. Like he like aged rapidly while he stayed in his like, decrepit house.
Well, I think that was like the curse. Like the wife died, like trying to like be his perfect wife and then was able to like give that to him as a ghost when he came back. But then like, because he accepted it, he like also accepted the curse, I guess, and that the black hair was like eating his life energy because like she felt like she was left behind. I don't know. Who knows?
It was not fully explained. Maybe it's just part of a culture and belief that we don't know.
It's a curse. You were an asshole to a lady who really liked you, so you deserve to get punished.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. So, you know, I guess the moral is never return to your first wife if you find a second.
Well, yeah. Don't marry a lady, leave, marry another richer lady, and then go back to the other lady again. Like, that's not good.
No.
Maybe she didn't like his goofy hat.
His hat was goofy. All right. So then, how many sake bowls out of 10 do you give Kaiwadan from 1964.
This one's hard because there's a lot of different stories, right? Mm-hmm. Would I watch it again? Probably not, because it's too long.
Yeah.
And it's a big time commitment. but I didn't dislike it. I mean, it was interesting. But I'll give it a 6. 6 sake bowls out of 10.
Yeah. I said the first one was okay. Like I said, Hoshi was interesting at least. Fourth one was pretty good too. I didn't really care for, the woman in the snow story. And I said, we just watched Ugetsu. So we watched the longer version of the first one. So yeah, I mean, I agree. It's not as good. It's a huge, huge time commitment. So if anything, just watch one of the two of the movies, quite honestly, and you'll be good. I mean, there's no interconnectivity that you don't have to watch all four of them to get like some bigger picture of everything.
Well, here's what you should do. You should maybe watch two, then take a break at the intermission, and then watch the other two. Maybe that's what you should do.
That's fair. If only someone puts an intermission signs there. That all being said, I agree. This is definitely a 6 sake bowls out of 10. Anything else before we wrap this up?
Nope.
All right, so the 80s are calling us from their car phones. What? But we stay in Japan next week and see what fever dreams they come up with, even with a film inspiring one of the best horror video game franchises of all time, Resident Evil. And join us next week so we stick with Sweet Home, House, and Evil Dead Trap. And not what I thought when I saw this as a kid. This was not a sequel to Evil Dead. So
no, it appears to be.
Oh, it's the same font and everything.
Right.
So it's just interesting because I said, I think we all know at least about two of these movies. I think I've seen all three, honestly. How about you?
I haven't seen any of them.
Oh, but you know the cover of the House one, right?
Yeah. No, I know of them all. I've never watched them.
Yeah.
So I understand Sweet Home and the inspiration for Resident Evil and all that kind of stuff. House or Houseu, I know it's like goofy, crazy, wacky shit.
It fully belongs in the House franchise.
Yeah, I know there's, it's again, I know the story, the general stories, I've just never watched.
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure I rented Evil Dead Trap or bought Evil Trap in the late 90s thinking it was some unknown thing about Evil Dead, and I was severely wrong. So, all right. So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to. And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked on the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Good night.